faculty. I've got some really just strong, strong faculty members. And the judges have it easy. When they ask the attorneys, you know, this is, we don't have to, what happens in here stays in here, kind of. But the judges, you know, the attorneys, are, I can put this on my resume, or I'm the boss. I can come and go from my office whenever I want to. Well, to get qualified clerks in here to teach these classes, they don't get to dictate their schedule. I have so many dedicated clerks that they take vacation time to come teach you, and they are just very involved in improving the profession and just truly dedicated. So I'm cutting into Tammy's time to introduce her. Tammy is one of those people who just make my job so easy, and she has taught me so much about the profession. She is very involved with TCCA. If you guys aren't involved with that, I encourage you to get involved. It's just, there's a core group of that. There's only so many jobs and so many hats you can wear, and Tammy wears a lot of them. But I'm giving her this big buildup because she had hell getting here yesterday. She headed to the airport yesterday afternoon, 4:30 flight canceled, 7:30 flight she got bumped on. She got in here about midnight on top of her other jobs. So I would like you to welcome Tammy Odom. Tammy runs the city of Sweeney. She has been there since 2000. She's the president-elect of the Texas Court Clerks Association, president of the Gulf Coast chapter. She has just been a very valued faculty member to me. Please welcome Tammy Odom.
Thank you. We didn't get a good mic check earlier. Can everybody hear me? Okay. Well, if you don't know me, I'm known for being quiet and subdued, and so I don't usually need this microphone, but I'll try to speak up and be a little bit more lively so that you don't doze off on me today. I told someone on the flight last night, I said, I'm teaching a class in the morning, and I'm going to be the only one sleeping. But it was an interesting yesterday. Kathy said I worked yesterday part of the day, then I tried to get on a 4:30 flight, then they bumped me on a 7 o'clock flight, my 9:40 flight didn't leave till 10:05, and I got to the Midland Odessa Hair Care and Tire Center, and have any of you ever seen that movie, The Langoliers, the Stephen King movie? I lived it last night. I stepped off that plane and I looked around. The airport was closed. There wasn't a soul in there. And I've come in late where there's a few people still milling around. I'm telling you, no one in that airport. I started telling everybody, okay, back on the plane. This place is fixing to fall off the face of the earth in just a few minutes. But it was kind of a surreal experience. In fact, I had to wait on the crew to ride with me back to the hotel. But the staff here at TMCC took good care of me. They made sure they didn't give up room, and I didn't have to walk from the airport. I did, however, make a trip to the bar last night to see if I could get a drink, a Coke, because I couldn't find the vending machines because at midnight you're just not functioning on all four cylinders. And I do recognize some of the faces in here. You know who you are. I won't point you out. Anyway, speaking of the bar last night, I am alcohol offenses in municipal court. Now, I don't know why they gave this topic to me. Does anybody in here have any idea? How many people in here have been in one of my classes before? Maybe a new clerk's school? Okay, so not too many people are going to be dazed and confused when we're done. Some statistics that you might not be aware of. 2009 statistics, and these are the last ones that I could get my hands on that were completed. 34,745 non-driving juvenile alcohol cases. 2,852 DUIs. Those are our courts alone. So over 35,000 alcohol cases. So obviously you can see the need for making sure that we're clear on how we report these, the impact of them, and also how they affect us with our juveniles. There are some other impacts, the impacts on our community. Two offenses impact us as a community to the degree that substance abuse does. If I run a stop sign and I hit your car, that's two vehicles, maybe eight people, small impact there. But the effects of alcohol and substance abuse on our community are wide-ranging, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Also, you may not have heard, but there is a public perception that we do not hear alcohol cases. How many of you get that alcohol case and you get the defendant in there and they say, I thought only the JP could hear these. Only the Justice of the Peace can hear alcohol. I can't get a PI in municipal court. So there is some misunderstandings out there and some bad public perception. Again, you'll be surprised to know that a lot of people think the municipal court is there to generate revenue. Surprise. You just gave me this ticket so that you can have shrimp at the Christmas party. Yeah, right, that was it. You're not that special. Reality of it. Underage alcohol use is more likely to kill than all illegal drugs combined. That's heroin, crack, cocaine, LSD, hash, any of those drugs that you can think of that are out there right now. Underage alcohol likely to kill than all of those drugs. 5,000 under the age of 21 die from alcohol-related injuries each year. So if you think about how many of you are from a town that is 5,000 people or less, you think about your entire town being wiped, the population of your town being wiped off the face of the earth every year. Think about all those faces, all those people. 120,000 alcohol-related emergency room visits. Now, these statistics were from accidents, auto accidents, falls downstairs, hit by cars, fights, all the things that come out of alcohol use and abuse. So 120,000. So how many of you are from a city of approximately 120,000? Think about every person in your city going to the emergency room for an alcohol-related offense. Every single person. The consequences of alcohol use, overuse, and abuse. First, you have to look at the personal consequences. And I'm going to ask you a question real quick before we go any further. And this is not intended to embarrass anyone or point anyone out, but I hope that you'll be honest and forthcoming. I would like to know, and I would like to see by a show of hands, if you would, please, how many of you have been negatively impacted by a friend, a family member, or a coworker who has an alcohol or substance abuse issue? Okay. So you can see, obviously, that you're not the only one, and it's usually about half to a little more than half of the people that I have in my classes. So you can see that that wreck that affected a small number of people, you can see now we had obviously more than eight people in just this small group who have been impacted by the use, abuse, or overuse of alcohol. Personal consequences. You drink too much, everybody knows your health's going to deteriorate. Alcohol does very bad things to your body in large quantities or for long-term use. I mean, I guess the liver, that's what we all, you're pickling your liver. Well, that literally is the truth. You are literally pickling your liver. You will kill it if you use, abuse, and overuse alcohol. Now, trust me when I say I have a drink every now and then. If I'm going to do karaoke, I might need to. But I'm talking about people who are abusers and overusers of alcohol. Your work. if you're sick and you can't come to work, you think your job's going to be happy about that? You're hungover and you can't go to work on Monday morning? How many of you have that habitual person that goes to the Thursday night dollar night and can't make it to work on Friday? And if they do manage to come dragging in, they're useless. And then they want to tell you about how drunk they got the night before? Really? Really? Okay. First of all, I don't want to hear it because you did it to yourself. But it does have an impact there in the workplace. And as your health deteriorates, you're going to miss more and more days. It's going to put more workload on the people who are left behind. Family. You think your family's going to be happy with you when you're sick and you got no job? No. No. So that family relationship starts to deteriorate. Personal relationships. When alcohol users and abusers cannot depend on family members anymore, you've heard the grandma stories. I'm going to call my grandma. She's going to bring me some money. And grandma says, I did it the last time. Last time was the last time. I'm not doing it again. When they run out of those family members, they start looking to friends. Can you give me $100? Fine. I've got surcharges. I can't do this. I can't do that. I'm homeless because my wife has kicked me out. My husband has left me. He's taken the kids. I got nowhere else to go. I need to stay at your place. I'm drunk. I can't go home. Legal consequences. When we think about the legal consequences, we think of words like punishment, fines, probation, and jail. Disqualifications from employment opportunities. How many of you have applied for a job in the last 5 years? A few. Veterans in here. Every one of those applications asked you, have you been charged with an alcohol-related offense? I'm seeing that more and more. Have you been convicted of a misdemeanor, class B or above? What's that first DWI? It's class B. So that first DWI conviction could keep you from getting a job or qualify you from employment, especially if you're an over-the-road truck driver, a delivery person, anything that involves you being able to drive as part of your job. Legal costs for legal counsel. I like to do this when Kathy's in here because we all know your lawyers are cheap, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that Ryan and Kathy and the staff here are probably the nicest lawyers I know and the most honest. There's five. That'd probably be it. Yeah. You know why sharks don't eat lawyers? Professional courtesy. Impact on court. Increased possibility of trial requests. Okay, so now these people, they're not smart enough not to overuse alcohol, but they're smart enough to realize the impact once they finally get caught. You know, the people who cry because they got arrested, they say they're sorry. They're not sorry they got drunk, they're sorry they got caught. But they're going to contact their lawyer, or they're going better contact their friend who's gotten a DWI before, who is going to tell them, whatever you do, don't plead guilty or no contest. You need to fight it all the way. So that increases our trial requests. Increased conflict. You get those cases where you have the two brothers that got drunk on Friday night and beat the mess out of each other. They get set for the same arraignment date. Don't you love that? So they're, you know, growling at each other in the courtroom. So you have that increased conflict and potential security risk in your courtrooms during arraignments and trials. And nice when you have the trial and the ones pled no contest, and I'm going to testify against so-and-so because they were drunk too. I love that. What are you, like three? Increased contact with attorneys. Again, I will say, we love attorneys. She's back. I have to be nice now. Look, did you see her? What? She knows I'm talking about her. Increased contact with attorneys. for us, that means more motions, more paperwork, requests for this, requests for that, drag it out. We want a pre-trial. We want another pre-trial. Okay, everybody following me on that one? Increased request for deferred disposition. Again, anything to keep that conviction off their record. Longer times to process. You got to track that case for 90 days, sometimes longer than 90 days if they don't comply. Increased requests for alternative dispositions. You know, can I have, that's when the Monty Hall thing situation starts with your prosecutor. I'll do this if you'll do that, and we'll do that, and we'll do this. And then you get this paper that has 15 different conditions, and you've got to try to track all that stuff. Expunction and non-disclosure requests. Okay, everyone familiar with the non-disclosure request? We tell them not to tell us what we just told them. You know how that works? Got it? We tell them not to tell us what we just told them. Okay. Expunctions, although they're not usually difficult, a lot of paperwork involved there, some cost, and not a fail-safe by any means. Trial issues. How many of you do trials? How many are you are the person who gets those trials ready to go? Okay. Then you know in your complaints you have a more specific wording that you have to use. You have to make sure that the elements of that specific offense are in that complaint. You have to process jail paperwork. They went to jail, they pled not guilty, now they've bonded out. You've got to try to get them back in. And we all know that all jail paperwork in the exact same format, every piece of paper that we need, timely. If you do, raise your hand, because I'm coming to work there. I get one piece here, and 2 weeks later I get this, and then something else will trickle in that I didn't even know existed. And so I'm usually trying to get things through that entire process from the jail. And no offense to people who work in the jail. I worked in a jail for about 7 years. I worked in a county jail with 1,000 inmates. So you can see that PI sometimes is not their priority. They're not being as careful with that paperwork as they probably should be. Defendant notification issues. We all know that when a defendant gets booked into jail or arrested or stopped on the side of the road, they always give their correct address and a working phone number. I get them sometimes, I'm like, oh, that's not even our area code. Interesting. And I ask the officer, did you notice that area code is New York? Nope, that's what they gave me. That's what they said. All right. So defendant notification issues become a problem, especially when they are too intoxicated to speak and they're trying to give you all their personal information when you book them into jail because they have either lost or do not possess a driver's license or ID. They can barely remember their first name, sometimes the last name, not so much. Now, you think they're going to remember where they live and give you 3 contacts and all those great things? No. Officer education. If I could just have an hour and 15 minutes with every law enforcement officer in the state of Texas, I would be a happy woman. I could go to my grave happy because I have got a whole list of things we need to talk about. Yeah. She's going, yeah, 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 give me an hour. Give me a day, and it'll be a whole new world. But, again, I don't know if you're familiar, but, you know, in the police academy, they don't cover a lot of the things that you would assume are covered in the police academy. They don't tell them how it's going to be when they come to court to testify. They don't tell them what information they need to provide to the court to get their case tried expeditiously. They don't tell them how to interact with court staff. I worked in law enforcement 7 years. When this job came open, they said, we need a deputy court clerk. I said, I'm all on that. They don't do nothing. I promise you. That was my thought process was, she just sits up there and writes on stuff and hands it back and forth to the judge, and people come up there, and she's smiling all the time, and I'm thinking, she's a happy girl. And I was wrong. Because I started in July, I had no one to train me. And I'm sorry for those who've heard this story before. I had no one to train me because there had been two people between that quit. And I thought, that should have been a clue to me. But there had been two people that quit. I had no one to train me. I had no idea how their software system worked. I had no idea, trust me when I say, not a clue, how municipal court worked, other than the fact that law enforcement wrote tickets and we put them in the box. Woo! Job done. I started at the end of July. I went to my first clerk school the end of August. I cried, and I promise you people, I'm not a weeper. I cried on the phone to the sheriff the whole way home. I want my job back. Can I please have my job back? I'll be good. I won't be ugly to the inmates or nothing. I'll be really good. And he said, you're going to like that job. That's a good fit for you. Give it a month. If you don't like it in a month, I'll find something for you. And I'm glad I stuck it out. But that's where, like Kathy said, the TCCA, where those people helped me, those people taught me how to do my job. TCCA clerks that I could call and say, what do I do with this? This person's filed an appeal. I didn't have a clue what to do with an appeal. I didn't even know you could appeal. How sad is that? I didn't even know you could appeal in municipal court. I was like, this idiot wants to appeal this traffic ticket. And I remember Elaine Brown from Katy saying, okay, process it. Really? Well, sure. Okay, well, you're going to have to break it down and tell me how to do it. So I learned baptism by fire. You've heard that expression. And trust me when I say I made a lot of mistakes. A lot of mistakes. But I truly do wish that we had a class just like this for law enforcement so we could spend an hour and 15 minutes teaching them how to do it the right way. Deviation from traditional citation processes. Okay, that PI is going to be a complaint. How many of your officers want to write a citation for PI? Nobody? Well, maybe that officer education is working out. Look, and the ones who do go, it's okay. It's not you doing it wrong, girl. Raise your hand. It's them. They screw up all the time. And I do think for the little bit of education that our law enforcement does receive as far as it relates to municipal court, that they do on average do a good job for us. There's just some little things that I'd like to work out with them in an hour and 15 minutes. Class C offenses, adult offenses. Okay, so the adult offenses that we're going to see are public intoxication, sale, possession, consumption of alcohol where prohibited, after hours, or by TABC law. Open containers of alcohol in a motor vehicle, city ordinance violations. A lot of us have those, you can't have alcohol in the park, can't have alcohol at the city swimming pool. We have some of those things going on there that we might see. And then you have, like I said, all the ancillary offenses, the DOCs, criminal mischief, assault, all those things, because everyone knows that people who are extremely intoxicated cannot keep their hands to themselves. They're either, they want to hit you or hug you. So that's where all those things come from. And they all think they're pretty. Not really. Public intox, elements of the offense. They must be intoxicated in a public place. Intoxicated in a public place. This next one is the most important element, in my opinion, to a degree that they may be a danger or to themselves or to somebody else. It can't just be that they're intoxicated in a public place. That does not meet all the requirements of a public intoxication charge. They also must be a danger to themselves or others. So if you're stumbling drunk down the sidewalk and you might step out in front of a car, you could be a danger to yourself. You're aggressive acting and intoxicated in a public place. Maybe you're a threat to someone else. You might harm someone else. Yes, ma'am. She asked, your front yard is a public place. Write it down. Your front yard is a public place. I'm just teasing. You don't have to write that down. Unless that's an issue in Alpine. Yeah. Y'all got a lot of drunks running up down there in their yards. She says, yeah. Okay. Write me down here. Write Alpine down on here. I might want to come visit your city. Sounds like my kind of place. On those, the fine is not less than $1, more than $500. Possession of alcohol in a motor vehicle. Do y'all ever get the people who, as soon as they find out you work for the court, they want to ask you all these court questions? Well, if I do this, if I drive my golf cart to the grocery store, can I get a ticket? Well, you already knew the answer to that, or you wouldn't have asked. But they all want to know this information. This is the thing I get asked about the most. This and carrying stuff in your car. Am I going to get arrested if I carry a gun in my car? Am I going to get arrested if I have alcohol in my car? Well, if you have a gun and alcohol and you're PI, yes, you're going to jail for a lot of things. But possession of alcoholic beverage in a motor vehicle. That motor vehicle must be on a public highway. If you're sitting out in your driveway with the radio on in your car and you're kicked back having a cold one because your air conditioner in your house doesn't work and it's 106 degrees in freaking Midland, Texas. And, yeah. Oh, by the way, there was one person leaving the airport when I came in last night. It was Satan. He said it was too hot. He was going home. But, that vehicle must be on a public highway with an open container of alcohol. Now, some of this seems silly for me to even have to mention, but these are things that kind of get missed sometimes. You have to break it down. It has to be possession of it. It has to be on a public highway. It has to be an open container of alcohol. If I go to the grocery store, I pick up a six-pack, it's in the back seat, none of the seals are broken, I am not violating this law. However, if I buy that same six-pack, I pop one open and I have it in the cup holder, now I am. It must be in the passenger area of the motor vehicle. Now, then here comes the question, well, what if I drive a pickup truck and it doesn't have a bed on it? Or, you know, people are going to try to come up with all kinds of ways to get around it. But the definition of that is in the area of motor vehicle designed for the seating or operator and passengers of the vehicle. That's the inside of your cab or your pickup. It does not include the glove compartment or any other storage unit that is locked. So yes, the console of your car, if it's not locked, you would still be in violation of this statute. But if you take that same beer or same bottle of alcohol, say you put the lid on it, you put it in the console, you lock it up, even though it's right there and it's within reach, it is not a violation. So here's another one of those situations where officer education is very important, because some of them miss this day. They miss this day of police school. In a pickup truck, that alcohol can be carried behind the last upright seat. Okay? So if you have a two-door truck, just a single cab, single seat, that alcohol can be placed behind that last seat. If you have a minivan or a SUV, behind the last upright seat. So in that cargo section in the very back. If it doesn't have a trunk. Exceptions. Limos. How bad would it suck to rent a limo and not be able to drink in that bad boy? Not good. Not good for the limo business, right? A bus. Not a school bus. Despite what some of the children at our school district think. The living quarters of a motorized house coach. That's a motorhome, for those of you who don't understand those fancy schmancy terms. This is a little disturbing because I can say, Daddy, hand me a cold one out of the fridge there, would you? While I'm driving this massively 10,000-pound vehicle down the highway. But it is an exception. Officer education. Police officer cannot arrest solely for this offense. And they must issue a citation if they charge. That notice must contain the date and time to appear, just like every other citation. And the fine cannot exceed $500. The thing that I want to point out to you about this, and this is where people get a little confused, you know, when they're trying to jailhouse lawyer, this is not in the transportation code or the alcoholic beverage code. This is in the penal code. Okay. Go to hunt that down. A lot of us, when we're looking for alcohol offenses, the first place we're going to look, so ABC, if we don't find it there, we're going to go to transportation code. But this one is going to be in the penal code. TABC offenses. Do not be fooled in the fact that adults cannot be charged with possession and consumption of alcohol-related offenses, because they can and they are. Most of those have to do with hours of operation or the place they consumed that alcohol. There are several different kinds of licenses issued by TABC for alcohol consumption. Okay, some places have on-site consumption only. That'd be like your Chili's and Red Lobster's and the restaurant type businesses, okay? Then you have some that are licensed that are only for off-site consumption. Your Valero, Stop and Go, I don't know what you have, Circle K, whatever, you know, your local convenience stores. The licensing that they have says you cannot consume that on their premises. Then you have all these little mutations of that. And when I say that, some cities and counties only allow beer and wine sales. Some only allow beer and wine public consumption. Some allow everything. So you kind of need to know what's allowed in your city, what's allowed within your jurisdiction. And sometimes that's a public education issue, because I may move from County A, where there's a liquor store on every corner. I can go into a restaurant and have a mixed drink. And I may move to County B, where they only allow the sale of beer for off-site consumption. So every county, every city is going to be different. Every establishment that sells alcohol could be different. So don't assume that there's this blanket TABC law that's going to apply to every alcohol sale in your jurisdiction. And again, some are related to the licensing of the premises. Adult city ordinance violations. Again, that's usually just the having it at the wrong place or the wrong time. Some city parks allow alcohol till dark. That's very vague. You can drink till dark, but you can't drink after dark. If you have one of those vague, strange ordinances that you don't understand, trust me, the people who live in your city don't understand it either. So those are the kind of things that it's a good idea for us to bring those to our city managers or to our city attorneys on occasion and say, you know, could we clean this up? Can we make this a little more specific? It would help with the enforcement. And what happens with those vague ordinances is law enforcement will just not enforce them at all, because they are so vague that it makes the enforcement of them almost impossible. Home rule. We got any home rule people out there? Okay, a few. Make sure that you look at your home rule or your charter to see how that relates to you. Don't just stop at your city ordinance. I've seen city ordinances that are completely contradictory to what your city charter says. So make sure if you go in and tweak or change a city ordinance that you're making sure that you're not going to be violating your charter. Some city ordinances are related to special events, permit, that type of thing. Say you want to do a concert in the park, and the organizers of that could certainly come before your city council and ask for a variance. The situation you get into with that is, if I go there one time and drink alcohol, why can't I go there and drink alcohol again? So, while city ordinances are punished by fine, they're not reported to DPS. Okay, we're not going to report any possession of alcohol in the park or after-hours consumption if it's a city ordinance. And the first one usually carries the same penalty as the last one. There's no enhancement, or you get three of these and it goes to a higher class or a higher fine. It's usually, typically, the first is the same punishment as the last. Now, one thing everybody always loves, and that's juvenile offenses. Let's muddy the water a little bit. How many of you are juvenile clerks or juvenile case managers, have worked in the juvenile justice system before, maybe in another profession? Okay. I think we're dropping the ball on this, people, and this is my opinion because I'm going to give you a few of those today. I think we are missing this because it's never been really in our plate before. The goal of juvenile justice is to rehabilitate and to re-educate and to try to stop the behavior before it becomes an adult issue. In court, we say we're more of a processes type thing. We do this, then we do this, then we do this, then we do this, then we do this. When it comes to juvenile alcohol offenses, there is no cutter way to handle every one of those cases. I'm going to go into some other things why I say that. Your paperwork's still going to be the same. You're still going to set them on the same dockets and do the same things. But there's a little bit more we need to look at on these. Part of our job as in the judicial system, part of our job as adults, part of our job as human beings, is to care and protect those who cannot care and protect for each other, themselves. And this is the one time I would say it's very important for you to go with your feelings about a specific situation, especially if you're a juvenile case manager. Don't be so quick to judge those habitual offender kids until you know the whole story. Because sometimes they're in a situation they got no control over. Again, the family code references this goal. Chapter 45 references this goal. We know chapter 45 belongs to us. This is how TABC defines it. I love this definition, so I included it today. It is the protection of the welfare, health, peace, temperance, and safety of the people of this state. I think that could sum up really what we do every day. That could be our mantra, as far as I'm concerned. It is our job to protect the welfare, health, peace, temperance, and safety of the people of this state. As far as court appearances, like I said, some of those things are going to be the same, some are going to be a little different. Minors and children must make a physical appearance in open court. No mail-ins. Minors under 21, but who are 17, may appear without a parent or guardian. That has changed. Just two sessions ago. Okay? Used to, it didn't matter if they were grown, had kids, they still had to bring their old mama back to court with them, just so they could take care of that traffic ticket or that alcohol ticket that they got when they were 16 or 17 years old. Children may not be released on citation. That's children. Children must be released to a parent or guardian. And they must be held in a place of non-secure custody until they can be released to that parent or guardian. Both a minor and a child are punished under the, Alcoholic Beverage Code. Excuse me just a minute. Sorry about that. Alcohol offense is under 21. Here's a few that we see. Public intoxication by a minor, minors in possession, minors in consumption, minor DUIs. How many of you are out there that have kids that drive and it just scares the out of you? I have 6 children. If you would like one, see me after class. I can hook you up with the one that best suits your needs. Actually, we have 4 grown and graduated and grown. They don't leave. We make it too easy on them. My husband walks through the house going, "Get out." My kids think my house is haunted. Every time they open the door, he goes, "Get out." Doesn't work. Their little feet are dangling under my table every night. But it does scare me to think of those DUIs in relationship to my children. And I'm going to stop and tell you a little story here. I'm very fortunate to still have my grandmother. And she's 84 years old. And she can remember the trip through the birth canal. So don't think just because you get old, you forget anything. She can remember stuff I did that I don't even remember doing. I'm not sure I did. It might have been another cousin, but anyway. So I'm very blessed to have her. And we were talking one day, and how this subject, you know, how subjects come up sometimes. But it was my grandmother, my mother, me, and my daughter. And my daughter was saying something about somebody being killed in a car wreck, and they thought they'd been drinking, and wasn't a close friend of hers, just an acquaintance that she went to school with. And my grandmother said, "Well, you know, I think we, you know, when I went to school, I remember, you know, maybe 4 people being killed in car wrecks that I knew because there was alcohol involved." Okay, this woman graduated from high school in 1943 at 16 years of age. No kindergarten, no 12th grade. And my mother said, "Yeah, well, that's about how many we lost when I was in high school. You know, I kind of can remember, you know, just not necessarily their class, but through the whole school." And I said, "Well, you know, same for me. I think there was 3 or 4 kind of I remember when I was in school." And my daughter, who had just graduated from high school, said, "We lost 3 in our class. 3 different accidents." So you think about how in this woman's 84 years, she had lost approximately 3 or 4 classmates or schoolmates from an alcohol-related offense when they were young. My mother had lost the same amount in 64 years. I had lost the same amount in 21 years, in 43 years, and my daughter at 18 had lost the same number of classmates or schoolmates from underage drinking. Scared me. It was really a reality check for me. Minors attempting to purchase alcohol. We all know about the fake ID. And they're becoming easier and easier to manufacture, not just for the purchasing of alcohol, but for any identification purposes, for immigration and what have you. So I think that as that technology improves, we're going to see more and more of this misrepresentation of age and purchasing or attempting to purchase alcohol. The thing about this is it's very isolated that the clerk will actually bring it to someone's attention. It usually takes a sting or some type of long, drawn-out investigation to bring these things to light. But I think we'll see the state putting a little more pressure on these law enforcement to do these types of stings and things to knock down on these alcohol offenses. Parental orders. This is where your judge's knowledge and your encouragement can be very, very helpful in these situations. The court can order a parent to do refrain from any act that increases the likelihood that a minor will complete an alcohol awareness class. So you get these habitual kids that come in over and over, and they never finish their class. They never do what they're supposed to do. They never pay their money. They never work their community service. You have those. I know you do. If you don't, you will. And you know who we put the pressure on? We pressure these kids. You know, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you take your class? Why didn't you go here? Well, you know, the class may be 20 miles away and mom's passed out on the couch drunk every afternoon when that kid gets home from school. They may not have a vehicle. Mom may have lost her driver's license because she's got so many DWIs, she can't drive that kid to where they need to go anymore. But the judge can order, if you see there's an issue with a child, maybe they weren't able to complete some terms in the past, the judge can order that parent from doing anything to refrain from any act that would increase the likelihood that minor would complete that alcohol awareness class. Don't always assume that it's the minor that's the issue there. Could be that you need to get the parent in and have a little sit down with them as a group. Because again, we said this is for a rehabilitation, re-education, and retraining of these kids. Additional sanctions for children. Maybe the court needs to issue an order to refer this family to welfare services. Maybe they don't have the means. And I will tell you, there's a lot of people out there who are in need. There's a lot of people out there that have a true need. They cannot put food on the table to feed their families. And either by their lack of knowledge or their lack of willingness to go to and ask for those services, maybe it's a language issue, maybe it's a cultural issue. I will tell you, there are men out there who would do anything to keep from asking for a penny or for a handout. They would rather see their families go hungry and without than to ask for a handout. So sometimes referring those children and parents to welfare services so that they can get their basic needs met, their basic needs. And I'm talking about a roof over their head and food on the table. I'm not talking about clothes or anything else, just what they need to survive. There are children who wake up every morning wondering, are they going to eat today and are they going to get beat today? That's a reality. If you aren't one, you know one. You may not even know that you know one. But there are children out there that wake up, am I going to eat today or get beat today or both? That's what they wake up, that's the first thing on their minds. So that alcohol class that they're supposed to go to because they got hooked up with some friends and got caught with some alcohol, that is insignificant to them on their list of priorities for the day. Welfare services, though, can also provide counseling for parents, counseling for students. It's not necessarily a handout. It's not necessarily financial help. They can refer to different services that you may not even be aware exist. But also requiring a child to attend a special program that is in the best interest of the child, maybe an after-school study program to keep that child off the street while mom's still at work or dad's still at work. But that takes effort on your part to find out what those services are. And I would say call your school counselors. They are a huge resource for these kind of things. And if you're dealing with these kids, so are they. They are too. Did you have a
question? You know, we get caught up in processing and paperwork.
That's right.
We got a huge wake-up call with the kids that we were having problems.
I tell you what, this is being audio recorded. Can I hand you the microphone so that you can?
It's a magic microphone. All right. Go ahead. We were having problems getting a kid and his mother in the court. And, oh, okay. Can y'all hear me now? The huge wake-up call was a school counselor contacted us. This 12-year-old boy had been left to care for his 9-year-old brother who had leukemia. And he made the phone call to 911 when his brother died. And so his minor in possession was the least of his problems. And it was a huge wake-up call for the court staff that we get caught up in processing the paperwork and what the next step is, and that with these juveniles, sometimes it's just a matter of backing up and finding out what we're dealing with.
And that's a sad story, but I think that's not a that's not an isolated incident. I mean, the specifics of that may be, but we have a lot of children out there. I'll tell you, we're in our third generation of crack addicts. Do you know that? We have people. We have people whose grandparents are crack addicts. We have children whose grandparents. And I'll tell you, I have wonderful parents, but my grandparents were truly role models for me my entire life. And you think, as a small child, your role model is a crack addict. Your role model cannot function on a day-to-day basis, or the person who should be your role model in life. Your parent. You know, we have kids who get, and we see this a lot with non-attendance cases. Any of you handling those? They can't get to school. They have to get up, make sure that younger siblings are cared for, and that mama doesn't asphyxiate because she drank too much last night and she's passed out on the couch throwing up. We have 8, 9, 10, 12-year-old kids who are primary caregivers in their home because the adults and their lives are completely dysfunctional. Now, who's showing those children how to be functioning adults? Who's showing them? I mean, my mother got up at heaven only knows what time every morning, made me a hot breakfast before I went to school every day. Every day. She worked a full-time job. My dad worked 2 jobs. But I never went without. We have kids now that open the refrigerator. There's nothing there. They couldn't even fix themselves a meal. So, and I'm not telling you this to depress you. I just want you to know this is reality. This is what it's like for some of these kids. So we can't just treat them with that assembly reality. So like you said, sometimes we need to back up and look. I think a large portion of our cases are just going to go through the system. We're never going to see those kids again. It's an isolated incident, and we can just process the paperwork. But if you have that habitual kid, or you have that one person that keeps kind of popping up on your radar, and it may not always be an alcohol offense. It may be a disorderly conduct, maybe assaults, maybe those kind of things. To start looking at those kids and seeing where we can help. What part can we do in helping to keep that from happening again, or to try to get them, not just get them out of that situation, but help them get through that situation. Like I said, if after-school programs, things like that, that may help help the child, the judge can order that as long as it's in the best interest of the child. Okay, additional sanctions upon conviction requires that a defendant who is under 21 and found guilty of an alcohol-related offense must complete the class, provide, I just had a little moment. Okay, complete the class. I got dizzy for a minute. Probably because I'm going in circles. Actually, I think I'm going to get a little more sugar here. Provide proof of completion of alcohol-related community service and must suspend the driver's license and notify DPS of that suspension. Okay, this is on a conviction. All three of these things are a must. We're going to talk about defer in just a second. Okay. Don't. Did you not read ahead? I know y'all studied this material last night. Except for those few that I'm not pointing at that were in the bar last night. I just knew y'all be studying while I was flying. That's why I worked so hard to get here. Public intoxication by a minor. We talked about what the elements of that offense. Is there anybody in here that's a nurse? Anybody know CPR? Want to move to the front? Okay. Do not joke like that? Okay. Well, you know, my brother's a paramedic. Did you know that? He's a paramedic. No. But I always say, if I go out, please don't let the last thing I see in this lifetime, his face coming towards me. I just tell him, let me go to the light. Just let me go to the light. I don't, you know, that's not what I want to spend eternity thinking about. I think I'm okay. I really do. I don't know what I did, but I'm okay. All right. Again, in the penal code, but the punishment's found in the alcoholic beverage code. It does require some additional sanctions when it is a public intoxication by a minor, alcohol awareness class, community service, suspension of driver's license. Are all these things starting to sound familiar with you? The big three. Minor DUIs. Has to meet all the DUI elements that are outlined in the alcoholic beverage code. A minor under 21, operating a motor vehicle, see how we're kind of keeping the same thing here, in a public place. But here's the exception on that. Any detectable amount, and it can only be alcohol. So I walk up to my 17-year-old kid, and he comes home, and I hate to tell you this is a true story. I walk up to him and I'm like, hey, did you have a wow. Did you have a good time last night? Because I spent the night at a friend's house. Mm-hmm. Really? Do I smell alcohol? Mm-mm. Really? And I'll tell you, my years of experience, and I wouldn't just sniff any kid's nose, but my experience tell me, don't smell their breath, smell their nose. Did you know that? Because when I, you're not going to smell alcohol near as bad as when I go, it's a true story. I don't know why. I'm not a doctor. Obviously, I wouldn't be standing here. But I said, for me. What? For me. Mom, here's when I know my kids are lying. You've lost your mind. Nope. Been gone. For me. And he, for me, and he's still grounded. I'm raising Eddie Haskell. I don't know if any of you have this child. I have three children. My husband has three children. We obviously have no children together because a man's got a head like this big. I'm not having that man's children. And so my children are perfect. The three that I gave birth to, except for Eddie Haskell. And he actually, on his own, signed a contract with me that he would never drink and drive a vehicle again. On his own. Because he knew how upset I was. Not the fact that he drank. He's 17. How many of you had never had an alcoholic beverage by the time you were 17? Anybody? Okay, I'm not in that group. My dad sang in a band. I was raised in a bar. I don't want to say my parents are extremely liberal, but alcohol was really one of those things. My parents did not fix us a mixed drink, but if they had one and we wanted a drink, we could ask and have one. I mean, a sip. Or, you know, they're not gonna go, can I fix you up a martini tonight, Tam? Yeah, make it a little dirty. But alcohol was never a taboo. It was never taboo in my house. But I don't ever remember seeing either one of my parents intoxicated. Ever. ever. And like I said, my dad sang in a band, and he spent every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night in a bar, and a lot of times we were there too. You know, it was the 70s. But kids do drink, and they do not have to be intoxicated to the degree that it isn't in danger to themselves or others. Just the simple consumption of that alcohol has put them in a dangerous position. So any detectable amount, if they, and you can smell it, they could be DUI. Now, in the minor system, this is a little something that I wanted to add in there too, because there was actually a case where the minor argued the fact that the alcohol was actually spilled on them, that they did not actually consume the alcohol. Therefore, they did smell of alcohol. And if the officer had only done the test, he would have known that the alcohol was spilled on the person. But they did win that case in the fact that the alcohol was actually spilt on the minor's clothing and not in the minor system. Mandatory community service. Mandatory community service. Here you go, sister. Upon conviction or deferred disposition, the court must order that the defendant, in addition to the fine, perform community service hours. Okay? Then break it all down. First offense, second offense. First DUI, second DUI. Okay, so DUIs have their own penalties or own range for community service, and your other offenses have their own range for community service. There'll be a quiz over that later. I'll ask you to close your books, and I'll ask you what they are. Not. This is where your juvenile charts, do you have those handy-dandy little juvenile charts there in the back of your materials or the front, or if you've looked at them? You should have one that says, I need a visual aid, please. That says juvenile offenses in municipal court, I think. Well, I'll be disappointed. I think I spy it over here. That's it. Mm-hmm. We have liftoff. It kind of looks like it might be in about the middle of your handouts there in the back. But your juvenile, just give me one page of it so they can kind of see what it looks like. It's this chart right here. It's several pages long, front and back. You see that one? Now, I kind of ragged on the quality of the printing last time, and they've improved it considerably. So I would say that you're good to go with the one that's in here, but it is also available online if you want to print it off. I printed this off, laminated it, poked a hole in it, put it on a ring binder, and it is a great little reference for not just me but for the judge, because all these things can become a little overwhelming and confusing, just like the law was intended to be. And but this goes through alcoholic beverage codes, DUI, education code, health and safety code, penal code, transportation code. It talks about the appearance, the expunction, what to do when the child turns 17 after a failure to appear, failure to appear charges. It tells you, do they have to bring a parent? Can they be placed in custody? This is a phenomenal chart right here. If you are not using this in your court, you're working too hard. There's no sense in reinventing the wheel. Laminate this thing so that it lasts for you, and I'll tell you right now, you'll make your whole life a lot easier, not just on alcohol offenses, but all of your minor offenses. This is also a fantastic tool if you get a new judge that may not have been to clerks or to judges school yet, or sleeps through school, or not that that would happen next door, but just a great reference guide for them to follow in the courtroom as well. Type of community service. The type of community service must be alcohol-related. Don't think that you're going to send these kids out to the dog pound unless you got a bunch of drunk dogs. They're not going to be able to work at the recycle center crushing beer cans, not close enough. that this is a very specific requirement, and this is where your juvenile case managers, your juvenile docket managers, those kind of people can really be an asset to you in locating good quality alcohol education. Now, is everybody here kind of from this area of where we are at that point where the point comes together? Anybody else from anywhere other than this general area? A few? Okay. Up. She's going up. Is there an up? There's an up. There's just not an over. Is that right? You can go up, but you can't go over. This area I know is so disjointed. You've got so many little towns that, and you've got the big towns are far away and things like that. So it may be a challenge for some of you to find these kind of opportunities, community service opportunities. I think this is where networking with the people in your area becomes so important. I'm 60 miles south of Houston, right on the coast. I can find some alcohol options. Now, my people may have to drive 15 or 20 minutes, but from what I understand, y'all go that far to the grocery store. So this is where it's really important through your TCCAs or just getting on the phone and calling people in your area saying, what are you doing with these people? Or if you come up with a great solution, throwing it out there on one of the, one of the chat things, what are they called? Well, sure, put all our business out there. The clerk, where the clerks and judges and the groups, you know, the groups. Yes. There you go. I'm so computer savvy. Where you're sharing your ideas. You know, if you found the mother load, please feel free to share it with everybody else because I'm sure they would appreciate that opportunity as well. Some that I have heard that my judge did for a short period of time. I don't know that it was effective with everyone, but he did make them go into one of our larger emergency rooms and document cases where they felt like alcohol was a factor in the person's coming in. You can't see the people coming in through the ambulance service, but that one kid wrote a fantastic paper, and I thought, you know, you're way too smart to be using alcohol. Wrote a fantastic paper on how he journaled it basically about how every person came in and what he thought how alcohol may or may not have played a part in their illness or their injuries as they came into the emergency area. If for some reason there is absolutely no alternative or any alcohol community service, the judge may order alternate community service, as long as it has a rehabilitative purpose. And driver's license suspensions. The conviction, on conviction, the court shall do 30, 60, 180. Again, those are in your charts. The court does not notify DPS of a suspension on a DUI because these have already been processed. So have you ever wondered why you're notifying them on everything, but you're not notifying them on a DUI? That's because the law enforcement handled it on their end. But I know I'm running short on time, so and I don't want to keep you over because I don't want you to be late getting out today. But the important thing to remember about that is you have to notify them immediately of an acquittal. Okay? This is one of those things where guilty until proven innocent. It is on their record until you notify DPS that they have been acquitted. If they are convicted, there's no action on your part. If they are acquitted, you must immediately notify DPS of the acquittal. Remember, you may have some prior conviction issues that come up with this. Make sure that you're looking at the family code. If you get multiple offenses, you might need to be checking on that. And remember, your deferreds are going to count as prior convictions. So when you're counting those up, you're not going to report it as a conviction, but it's going to count as a conviction when you are enhancing, or it's going to have be a multiple offense. Sure. I have never had one, and I would. Have y'all done DPS reporting already? Yeah. Okay, go ahead if you would. Okay, she said she reported that acquittal, and it's in there. Okay, am I not that far yet? Sorry. But it's immediate. I would not wait until you do your monthly reporting. I would report that immediately, even if you have to write it up on a... I know a lot of us are sending automatically. We're not handwriting those things. Even if you reported it twice, I think it'd be better to report it twice than not report it at all. Limitations on deferred. On a third offense, a defendant who is 17 or older is not eligible for dismissal on deferred. Again, that's in your chart. I'm not going to go over all of that, but I really do encourage you to read that chart. Read that chart. I know you're going to be bored and looking for something to do tonight and when you get home. And so even if you're just reading a little bit of that at a time or as that case comes available, give that thing a really good look over, because there are some little things like this that may affect you. The court can obviously grant deferred, but they still must complete the class, do the community service. You're still going to have a report, but it will not have a conviction. So if you're automatically reporting these or your software generates them, this may be another situation where you have to manipulate, you have to print that form. I don't care what you have to do to make it clear to them, but you need to write on there, deferred disposition. Highlight it, asterisk, whatever you have to do, because there have been some of those that have gotten reported as convictions because you got that person over there processing paperwork and they're seeing that form coming in and not really identifying that that is a deferred. So it still gets reported, but not as a conviction. You write deferred where it says convicted. Yes. Yes, yes. The same one you would report, the same form that you were going to report the conviction on, use that same form, but just real big. Like I said, highlight it, red ink, whatever you think it's going to take to get your point across. We're going to skip that. All of these things I included for your information, but they're things that are going to go through your law enforcement or your prosecutor, but I just wanted you to be aware of the long-term penalties for the continued use or abuse. There are some minor enhancements. Again, not something you have to worry about too much. Just the times... For you know, times for the suspension and the number of hours of community service goes up there. Okay. We talked about reporting. And there are some reporting requirements in there. I've got those listed out for you. Again, the suspension 3060-180, and that's on the DIC 15 form. If they fail to complete the course, the judge is required to order the suspension of that driver's of that person's driver's license for no more than 6 months. So they could do it. My judge says, I'm suspending your driver's license for 6 months. If you bring your proof that you completed the terms of this, I will lift that prior to the 6 months. This is a headache for the clerk. And we all know how easy it is to get DPS to undo something. So if your judge is doing that, ask them just to be really careful with that throwing that 6 months out there, because I'm going to tell you, 6 months for somebody that has a job or goes to school is a long time not to be able to operate a motor vehicle. And then we get into the DWLIs and the no driver's license and the expired driver's license because they can't renew, no insurance. It just kind of snowballs. Then, of course, we're going to report a beginning date and ending date, count out 11 days from the date so that they can get their business and affairs in order before they lose that driver's license. I think we're good on that. Again, we talked about the acquittal. Some of this I've already covered. That's why I'm flipping through. Okay. Do you have any questions for me before I pass you off to the next speaker? I think Kyle Clark's after me, isn't he? He's awesome. I'd like to stay for his class, but I'm going to go sit at the airport probably for another 6 hours and try to get home. But he does a great job. You're going to enjoy him. Any questions at all? All right. Thank you. I will. I will.